Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
She was a state senator for a decade and became one of the now famous marijuana moms, a title that probably doesn't mean what you may think it does. Now, Toy Hutchinson is the state official overseeing the Illinois legalization of recreational pot, and we have got a lot to talk about. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. Toy Hutchinson's official title is senior advisor to the governor for cannabis control. Some people call her the pot czar for short. I can't say if that's affectionate or not, but she is watching over the state's newest and apparently very successful industry. Toy Hutchinson is a lawyer and has been a lawmaker from Olympia Fields, and she was one of the top Democratic budget negotiators for years. I would call her a state budget expert and a strong advocate for people who were not born with trust funds and stock portfolios. She was also one of the four state legislators who crafted the recreational marijuana law. They're the so-called marijuana moms, parents who are also friends and who were fiercely dedicated to seeing that this law did more than just help people get high. Credit where credit is due. The others are Chicago State Senator Heather Staines, Chicago State Representative Kelly Cassidy, and Peoria State Representative Jahan Gordon Booth. Want to make sure that their names get in here, too, because you guys are a team. This weekend, we are going to talk about the law, the mission, the problems, and the future. Like I said, a lot. Toy Hutchinson, welcome back.
I'm so happy to be here. So good to see you. Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year to you, too. The first week of recreational cannabis sales in Illinois made national headlines and brought in nearly $11 million in sales. That was the good news, but we started the second week with some dispensaries out of the product. So overall, Toy Hutchinson, how would you assess where things are right now?
Fascinating. That's how I would assess it. It's fascinating. I feel like after spending so many years watching all the other states and what the states, how other states rolled out, we had a very, very smooth rollout. I mean, I remember, so I was up at 5:30 in the morning on January 1, and we were watching all day to see how things were happening. We had one minor little computer glitch in the morning that was fixed like within an hour. You had people, so many people standing in line. And the thing about the people who were standing in line was that they all seemed to be really happy people. Like, it was, people were talking to each other. They, neighbors were coming out with like donuts and coffee for folks in the cold. It was like at one location, I think there were almost 800 people in line before 7 a.m. So,
well, it was an event.
It was historic because it really marked the end of prohibition. That this was, this day in Illinois is the end of prohibition of cannabis in this state. And that is, you know, people just wanted to be there and be a part of it. And I think that's why the sales were so strong that first day. So largely, I could not have been happier with the way, you know, it initially rolled out. We told people for 3 weeks up until that point, there's going to be lines. There's going to be shortages. There's going to be this. The system has to work the kinks out. You couldn't anticipate what the demand was going to be. But what we saw was that it's a strong signal that there is an incredible amount and potential for growth. That the demand was a fascinating thing to watch.
What's the learning curve going to be like for this industry? Are there a lot of things?
Oh, goodness. Well, from the state perspective, you know, it would have been nice for some of the things that we did if we had had some breadcrumbs to follow. But we didn't. We used to go, the four of us, me, Heather, Kelly, and Jahan, would constantly talk to other legislators in other states, we'd say, what did you do well? What do you wish you could have done better? If you had it to do all over again, what would you do different? And that informed almost every piece of this equity-centric thing that we built. We knew that if you didn't tie the legalization and normalization of this product to the harms from the prohibition of the exact same activity, that it would be fundamentally unfair. And we knew we had an opportunity to do this in a different way than anybody else did. So the learning curve is steep. Like I tell people, this took hundreds and hundreds of hours and two governors before we got one that believed us. And then we, and then in walked J.B. Pritzker, who said from the outset that not only did he run on the issue, but he said, I want the most equity centric thing. I want Illinois to be different and to be a model. And it was when all the pieces came together, we studied, we traveled, we learned, we debated, we challenged, we even amongst ourselves, we would have hard conversations amongst ourselves, because when you talk about cannabis is so complicated. It is so layered. And it's indicative of why this is one of the few things that the state does that touches seven different agencies. So very few things that we do touch seven different agencies. So I am now switching hats from being a policymaker to implementing this thing. And that requires me to, you know, flex different muscles than I did when I was just really talking at the 50,000 foot level. Like, this is what I think the policy of the state should be. Now it's like, how do you do that? And we are working as hard as we can to do this the best way we can.
What's the biggest unknown right now? What's the biggest unknown that you're still trying to learn about?
To try to figure out? Well, on the technical side, you know, I am learning about the process. You know, it's like most people will talk about, you know, like even what the other states did. Like, should this be taxed and regulated like alcohol? And it's a simple question to ask. It is a much deeper question to ask about when you learn about vertical integration models or growth cycles or environmental concerns or labor issues. And, you know, the fact that these are retail locations at the dispensary level, but they're agricultural almost institutions at the plant level. Or the fact that this industry is emerging and there'll be so many different things that will grow along with it for people to be a part of, even if they never touch the plant. So I think the biggest unknown is that I don't think this industry is going to look the way it looks today 10 years from now. And so we have to work really hard to, you know, implement it, but also plan for what we hope the industry grows to be. And we don't have all those answers. We know what it's been, but we're trying to do something different here in Illinois. And that takes a lot of effort.
Do you know what you want it to be?
We knew that we wanted to do, that equity for us was three buckets. It was, how do you diversify the industry? What do you do with the money? And how do you undo the harms? How do you repair the harms from prohibition? And so on one end, I know that the industry was all white and pretty much all male across the country. Like, you could say almost every state in the nation has a legal medical program. But medical doesn't seem to be as polarizing or as political as adult use is. Most people, when you talk about medical, concentrate on patients. You know, like people who are severely ill, in terminally ill, or significant pain, or you start looking at seizure disorders and things like that, that there's room for people to be compassionate about the need to want to use cannabis to relieve yourself of these ailments and things, and to help its quality of life and all of those things. So you don't necessarily talk about when you get into the adult use space, then you realize that this is not just about whether or not someone can, as you said in the intro, which was awesome, to get high. This is drug policy reform. This is criminal justice reform. This is taking all that we've learned over from the failed war on drugs and doing it better. So to create that nexus, we drew a distinct line from people who were disproportionately impacted by the war on drugs, and the normalization and legalization of this product. It was like, we're in this moment in time where I think in 2019, 2020, looking back on this, these are pioneering days. And we're hoping that states that follow us use us as a model, because we attempted to do something big and we put everything we had behind it.
Well, I want to make sure that we talk a little bit about the criminal justice equity part of this before we get into the business end of the business, because, you know, wiping the records of clean of many people who were low-level marijuana possession offenders, That's a, first off, it's a gargantuan task.
Yeah,
I don't think people realize how many, I mean, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah, and it's one of those things too, when you say, when you start to really dig deep into the numbers and you realize how pervasive it was. So usage rates are the same across demographics, but the over policing and the excessive targeting and fines and fees and arrests and all those things that you get saddled with the effects of for the rest of your life happened disproportionately to Black and brown communities. That is just a fact. We know that people who were when we use that word DIA, disproportionately impacted areas or people, that was 55% African American and 22% Latino. So when you think about that, you just think about the sheer numbers of people, and it's generational. So it like affected, tore down communities for generations if you think about how long this has been happening. And to think that most governors, when they pardon on their way out. Mm-hmm. This governor was brave enough to put his name on it at the end of his very first session. And to stand there, I'll never forget standing there we were sitting in the jury box watching State's Attorney Kim Fox read the first 100 names of the first 1,000 that she was going to give to the chief judge. And I remember sitting there, it's very difficult not to be really emotional about it, because drug courts can be cruelly efficient. You can get convictions for people in batches where there's seconds between names. And we gave breath and pause to each name and thought about the fact that this is a result of something that myself and my colleagues worked so incredibly hard on. I sat there, I was sitting next to Kelly Cassidy when it happened. I grabbed her hand and we just looked at each other like, look what we did. It is to think about it now, still moves me like that. And then the governor turned around, and then we 11,000 in the initial run for these pardons. I just think about any person who has been saddled with a record that you have to deal with for the rest of your life. Like, you can't get a job, you can't get a student loan if you have a felony drug conviction, you can't sign a lease. Those pardons are going to mean something, not just to the person who was pardoned, but to their parents and their kids and their grandparents and their cousins and their Alderman Walter Burnett made that point when he was standing there. He said, this affects whole families and everybody you touch. So, yes, this is going to impact hundreds of thousands of people at the end of the day. No matter what the number of records are, this is going to affect hundreds of thousands of people when you really think about how many people just you touch, or how many people just I touch, or anybody in your family who cares about what happens to you. And that individual's ability to live full productive lives and participate in the economic stream, that's why this was bigger than just whether or not you stood in line to get some gummies. This was bigger than that. And we needed to give the weight and the credence to what this was. I know that there are people out there who don't trust it, don't believe it, or flat out don't want it. But we have to do better than what we've been doing for the last 80 years. The current system we had before legalization isn't safe for anybody.
How concerned are you that about the way police will be picking their way through this new landscape? You're still not supposed to use marijuana and drive. Mm-hmm. Still not real tests for it. The rules about where you can and can't consume it are still right. Being formed. I mean, how do you keep the equilibrium as you go through these new things?
I usually start from the standpoint of, again, Illinois is not the first state to legalize, it's the 11th. And so we had the ability, those are the areas where we had the ability to study other states and see data and see, you know, how they dealt with some of those things in good ways and in bad ways, you know, negative ways. I'm not naive to think that law enforcement is all of a sudden going to not have the systemic and structural issues with racism that are embedded in our system. I'm not naive enough to think that's all going to go away because of this one bill. However, we worked closely with our friends in law enforcement, the ones who really kind of leaned in. And the cool thing about the stakeholders that got involved in this, even people who we knew would never agree we still wanted to talk to you because they made the bill better. And law enforcement talked about things like, you know, DUI task forces and trying to get the public education out to have people understand that you really do need to treat this like alcohol. You cannot drive drunk. You cannot go to work drunk. You cannot be, you know, like you can't be in a state of inebriation doing things that put, especially if you're in any environment with public safety is a concern. It's not different than that. So part of this is thinking about it differently, watching a generational mind shift happening, and then understanding that as we work through these are issues that are happening across the country. And noting, by the way, that we had a medical program for 5 solid years, a population of people who have been legally consuming cannabis for 5 years in this state. I have yet to hear of an increase. There was no increase in traffic incidents with that population. There was no, the sky didn't fall. The sky really didn't fall. So there.
But their motive, those patients were seeing themselves as patients. That's
why I say
mindset.
It is a different mindset. That's why it's different when you talk about this from the medical side as opposed to the adult use side. But I will say they were living their lives. They were going to work. They were driving. They're living their lives, and it helped them live their lives. And we did. So the point I'm trying to make is that for 5 years, we've had a form of legalization in this state that did not cause major headaches for folks. And we need to understand that the way we regulate alcohol, the things that we understand about alcohol, one, that it has a fatal dosage point. Alcohol has a fatal dosage point. And we don't think twice about every bar on the street. We talk to kids about responsible drinking. There's public health education campaigns about that. You can't get to that place with cannabis until you legalize. You leave it in the shadows, we continue to have what we've been having. So anytime anybody says, are you going to keep this away from kids? I say, yeah, because I'm going to legalize it. Right now, it's all around your kids. You're saying, keep it away from schools, keep it out of parks. Yeah, we're going to legalize it because right now, it's all in the parks. It was easier to come across this than it was to get alcohol or cigarettes because the government was in the middle of that. And because we talk about it and because we regulate it, you cannot manage or effectively control that which you don't regulate. You can't regulate anything that's not in this legal market. So we want to move people to a safe, legal, tested market so that because at the end of the day, this is about public safety. It's all of this wrapped up into one thing.
You're listening to News Radio 780's At Issue. I'm political editor Craig Delamore. We're talking about Illinois' recreational marijuana legalization, and my guest is Toy Hutchinson, Governor J.B. Pritzker's senior advisor for cannabis control. Well, we have to address the anger that some people feel that the bill that's supposed to be a champion of equity is doing it gangbusters on the consumer side. But on the retail side, the people making money, as you pointed out, in the medical field, no black and brown people running dispensaries, and they're the ones who got the first crack at it. Just to bring our listeners up to date, if you don't remember, there were several Chicago aldermen who wanted to delay the sales here until these issues were addressed. You obviously saw things differently from the way they did. Talk a little bit about where we go from here.
Well, that's the exciting part. So one of the things that we intentionally did was design a phased roll-in. I didn't mean to make a joke. it was like a roll-in, a roll-out. But it was phased, and it was done intentionally. So one, we had a population of people who are accustomed already to going into dispensaries. That was, you know, one thing. And we're trying to change the public's mindset to that's the way you should be purchasing this. And two, we had a medical program that was existing already. So we needed to turn the industry around. And it takes time and effort to do that. So we designed an application process that would limit the amount of licenses that we would bring online. So we started off with what we already had, which had been in existence for 5 years. Like, we've known that this was a homogenous industry for 5 years. And then we said, we're going to limit the amount of licenses that come online. One, so that by the time those equity applicants come online, they still have market share to compete in. So let me give you an example. You have states that have, I think California has one dispensary for every 47,000 people. But you'll have a state like, I think it's either Oregon or Colorado. I'll have to check which one. But it's like one for every 9,000 or one for every 6,000. This rollout is one for every 400 or so thousand people. So we knew that keeping it, starting the program, but keeping it small was a way to protect the ability for equity applicants to come online and have some market share to compete it. That is very, very different than what any other state did. Every other state said, okay, it's legal. Here's the licenses. And they gave the licenses. The only people who could compete were the ones who were well-resourced, didn't need to use banks because you can't use banks. Knew how, you know, like, I don't know about you, Craig, but I didn't have a, I don't know people that I just say, like, you got a million, come over here, give me a couple million so we could do this.
Not my circles.
That wasn't my circle of friends. So we wanted to figure out what is the number one barrier to access to entry into this market, and it's access to capital. That's the number one barrier. And because you can't go to a bank and use financial tools, we're like, all right, how do you get the ability for someone to come to get into this? So we created a revolving loan program. And we seeded the revolving loan program with money from those original operators. So they started, they paid their license fees, that went into a fund that we could target to equity applicants to be able to start get their businesses up and running. And I wish we could have doubled, you know, the revolving loan. And we hope that in a mature market, it's going to continue to grow. And then you couple that with reducing fees and creating an application process with a point system that made equity so important you couldn't ignore it, but did it in a constitutional way so that it could stand up in court. We really thought about every program across the country that failed when the state didn't add equity provisions into it, and then people tried to backdoor the equity provisions either at the city or the county level. They almost all were struck down by courts. So we wanted to design a program that would stand up to muster knowing that we would have to be ready for people to challenge it. We knew that. So I say all the time when it comes to all the little pieces that we put in place to try to get those the ability for people to compete in ways that they hadn't before, that this is a long game. This is a long game. And that the issue here is not what it looks like on January 1. It's whether what we did worked over the course of this year. And when we saw 700 individual applications come in, which really is like, you're looking that represented a little over 3,000 or so licenses sought. 600 of those applications identified as equity. So what we had here in Illinois is the most diverse applicant pool in the country. And that is exciting to see. I can't wait to see how it shakes out. So what I say to people about, you know, the fact that the industry on January 1 is all white, we know that. Let's talk about this on January 1, 2021. And then we can talk about whether or not it worked. And I'm also really, really proud of the fact that we built in a slowdown mechanism that we put in the law that says after this first year, and we see what this was, we do a demand study and we do a disparity study to see if what we did worked. Because if it didn't work, there's not another license is going out until we can make course corrections. Again, something that no other state did. Once they open the doors wide open and everybody got in, you can't unring that bell. So we're doing this slowly and thoughtfully and deliberately to turn this industry into something that doesn't exist anywhere else. And I'm proud of that work.
Do you think there are going to be things that, I know this is probably early in to ask this question, that the legislature might have to go back in and fix or change?
I don't look at it as going back in. I look at it as moving forward. I think we're going to be doing weed bills for the rest of our lives. Because you think about it. You think about it. When was alcohol legal? We didn't get craft breweries until 2015. This industry is going to emerge and it's going to grow. So the future things, like there'll be new, there will always be new fights along the line. I wish there was, I tell... I was talking to my mom and my dad about this. I said, I wish there was one piece of legislation that I could write that would undo all the problems of being black in America for the last 500 years. If I could do that in one bill, I'd do it. I swear I'd write it. But you can't. This is fundamentally about change. And change takes time. And you have to invest in it. This is a long game. So I'm anticipating that as new issues develop, as the industry emerges, as it shifts and bends towards market considerations and people who are able to come in and compete. The one thing that gives me hope is that now Illinois pulled this off. But now you cannot have a conversation about legalization anywhere in this country without talking about equity. We did that.
One other, and we only have a couple of minutes left. How concerned are you that because of the taxes making the price of recreational marijuana so high, that the black market, some people are predicting that it's going to actually, if anything, get even stronger mm-hmm. with people seeking bargains?
Right. So we know that, right, there's 11 states now who have legal cannabis. We also know that every single one of those states is surrounded by states who still embrace prohibition. And as long as we're living in this gray area right now, we're not going to be able to get rid of totally the black market, which is not. Because one, Congress needs to act. It's fascinating that Canada is now all legal. Mexico is moving that way. So pretty soon, all of North America, this is not a matter of when. It's not a matter of when. I mean, it's not a matter of if. It's a matter of when, really, is what I'm trying to say. It is, legalization is coming. And it's happening a little slower in this country than anywhere else, but it's coming. And so the taxes that people are paying right now, one, are based on the way we tax alcohol. The taxes go up based on the alcohol content. Same thing with cannabis. The higher the strain, so the higher mm-hmm. taxes you pay are people buying really strong stuff. And then the lower the THC level amounts, the lower the taxes go. So it's based on that. Most states have had to adjust and tweak how they tax this. But people also need to understand that you're paying for being in a licensed, regulated, tested, packaged, and labeled product, which is very different than continuing to get the product from literally on the street, not knowing what you're getting. So that all costs money. We had to invest in this system. And I am also very proud of the fact that the sales, the revenue that comes to the state, if we wanted to make as much money as we could, as fast as we could, we wouldn't have done it this way. What we decided to do was not concentrate on the money, but instead concentrate on the people. And that's why 25% of these revenues are going back into the communities that were hit the hardest by drugs. Remember, I said earlier, three things. How do you diversify the industry? What do you do with the money? And how do you undo the harms? You can't repair the harms without community investment. And so everything that we thought about as it related to this plant, as it related to the sale of this plant, was thought about in terms of how we could rebuild communities in the face of it. And that's mental health and substance abuse, addiction help, job training, and technical assistance for nonprofits who do the work on the ground in these communities that got hit the hardest. So I get that, you know, some people had sticker shock. I also get that there were thousands of people who lined up all across the state because they wanted to do this safely and know exactly what they got and be a part of the end of prohibition.
That's going to be the final word. That is Toy Hutchinson, Governor J.B. Pritzker's Senior Advisor for Cannabis Control. Thank you for spending this time with us.
Thank you, Sam. It's always good to see you, Craig.
Always good to see you, too. To our listeners, if you would like a copy of this program or to hear it again, please visit our website at WBBMNewsRadio.com. Just follow the podcast links. You can also find our podcasts on radio.com. I will be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Dellamore, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.